My name is Robin McCullough. In the last 4 years, I have been working with environmental education in Ohio at a Lutheran camp, and I have taught in the classroom as well. So I have worked with a lot of different children and people in sharing a concern for the earth, and what does it mean to be a caretaker in a technological, very busy consumer society. So I'm going to share some of my experiences and some of my ideas in the first part, and then towards the end discuss ways that we can be better caretakers and some of the struggles that we all face. But to start with, I want you all to just reflect on a special time, and it might be this week or these days that you've been at Holden, when you have felt at one with the earth, where you have felt the harmony, the shalom, where God, creation, you clicked. That the moment of kind of specialness. Just think about that for a moment.
I do this all the time up here.
Right.
We all do.
Right. Down by the creek, maybe, looking at the mound. Okay, the stars. What did
you... The first day I came, I took that little path down there and sat down on the rocks.
Right. And it's...
How did you get into harmony with that pile of tailings? That's the big problem.
Oh, just shut it out of your mind.
Right.
Okay.
Maybe look at the opposite way.
Pretty good. Cool.
It's those special moments that I think that when we read the Psalms, when we read a lot of the Native American writings, that we can experience and feel the harmony, that there's no question that there is a God. Look at the stars, look at the mountains. And it's those moments of such harmony with the earth that to have a discussion about being caretakers seems absurd. How, of course, we want to take care of this. Of course, that's part of it all. In the Genesis story in creation, we are called to be the caretakers, to have dominion, to have loving, to be the loving lords. In the Psalms, we read, "The earth is the Lord's." Jesus led a life, a caring life. He has called us to lead caring lives of other people, of the earth. This is the background, our heritage of where we're coming from, to be the loving, caring people of all of God's creation. But to me, as I look around us, I think it's very safe to say that we have become very disconnected from the earth. Sure, we still walk on it. I'm talking about maybe an attitude. And the first time I really noticed that was when I was teaching. And I taught in a rural area in Ohio. And we were studying nutrition. We were talking about food. And I was asking these children who grew up on farms or in a farming area, where does hamburger come from? And it was like I had stumped them. And really think, how about milk? How about carrots? How about, and some of the different foods? And they were just pretty puzzled. And I thought that's a sad reflection, that we've lost where food comes from, some of those basic things. So I started doing some things with the kids as far as today's lunch. We're going to have pig, and we're going to have mashed up white tubers, okay? And we're going to have with that maybe some orange or red roots and maybe leaves. Okay, what were we having for lunch? We're having pig, so what might we be having? Okay, maybe some ham or something. We're having smashed up white tubers. Mashed potatoes, okay, which really sounds pretty gross, tubers, you know. And leaves, so having lots of leaves, you know, just, sure, some lettuce. And I was thinking maybe we should really start calling things what they are. Maybe that's how we can start feeling that all the things we put in our mouth came from the earth. And it's, we've kind of lost that. Well, they were amused by that until I was saying that for breakfast I might be having a bird's embryo and a pig's stomach. And, you know, they were used to having eggs and bacon, but sounded, you know, didn't sound quite as good and appealing. And yet, yeah, that's maybe part of us being disconnected. And one activity I'm going to do to also point out something. Beth, can I have your tennis shoe, please?
Are you sure?
How old were your children?
Sixth grade. Okay. Now, part of this, let me do this real quick. This always gets the attention here. Whenever students start to wander, I always do something like this. Now, what we're going to do very quickly is trace some of the natural resources that went into this fine example of the tennis shoe. So what's one thing that went into this?
Rubber.
Okay, rubber. Where do we get rubber from?
Trees.
Trees? What do trees need to grow?
Water.
Light.
Sunshine.
Air.
It could be chemicals. That may not be natural rubber. It's synthetic rubber.
Okay, so if it's synthetic rubber.
Oil.
Then you got styrene, you got butadiene, and you got everything.
Oh, man. It's a little different level there.
Yes, oil. Now cut it out. Don't
let's
go
stay on earth,
out.
Huh?
Get
let's
back
stay
to
on
basics.
Earth.
Okay, we'll stick with oil, okay?
Petroleum product.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, that's oil.
That's what it is. Petroleum.
Okay. Other things?
Cotton probably in the laces.
Okay. Leather, we'll say cotton as well. And what kind of leather might it be?
Cow.
Okay, maybe cow. Cows need grass.
That's
grass
right.
Need all these things to grow.
That's
cotton,
right.
Same thing.
Well, oil is same thing.
And cotton and textile.
Okay.
Products.
Cotton, probably plastic on the tips of the laces.
And plastics are
oil again.
Okay.
And there's metal in there. And the eyes of the
no,
the eyes it's, there.
No,
okay.
No
it's a cheaper. Okay. No. Okay, so we went. Now, the tennis shoe, after we put all these materials together, did not just appear.
Probably some paper in the insole.
Okay, and paper from the trees. So, the shoes.
Now, I'll go to a manufacturer.
Okay, so we've got a factory, and in the factory we've got people.
Processing.
Okay, steel, we've got the people, human resource. We've got all kinds of metals. Now, also you need some kind of electricity, a light source.
Power source.
That's overhead.
Power.
All the overhead, lights,
okay,
heat.
So we could.
Capital.
Yeah. Okay, and then eventually.
And transportation, more oil.
Okay, you've got
cars,
your transportation.
Trucks.
What about the factory? That's a building.
Yeah, he's got that. She's got the factory down.
Okay, so you finally got the shoe in a truck.
In a box, probably.
In a box, in the store. And you get to the store, and in the store, you've got your carpet, you've got furniture, and all those resources. And then you finally probably put the shoe on. Now, did they just give you the shoe, or how did they package that?
My mom gave it to me.
Well, usually when you
you've
got a box, but you probably got some paper to wrap your shoe within your box, and then sometimes they either tie it, and then they might put it in a plastic bag for your convenience, and then you take it home, throw out all the stuff, and there you have your shoe.
Surprisingly, it doesn't cost $100.
Yeah, I do.
Oh,
a lot of
money.
Yes, it's important to people.
What?
Supporting the people
that
are making care of doing the work.
Well, that's what jobs are all about. But it's also what natural resources are all about.
It's amazing if that shoe no longer becomes just the shoe. You begin to look at shoes a little bit differently. You know, and we buy shoes and sometimes they don't look right with our outfit, they don't fit, and we put them in a closet. But if we really think of the resources that went into that, it's starts to get us thinking that we are connected with the earth. Things do not just appear. This watch did not just poof, that I could trace everything in here to some resources. And ever since we became very specialized within our jobs, we've lost a thinking as far as that, the connectedness. And I think we're really challenged these days to think about what all went into that. Some of you I know lived through the Depression, and in those times, those were not wasteful times. You used things over and over. You didn't take down curtains because you didn't like the color. That necessity dictated that you use those for very long times. But now when that's not, we're not quite in that economic time yet, we've got more choices. And there's really, for a lot of us, no need to use curtains over and over. When we're tired with the color, we can change it. But what happens to the old curtain? And the resources, the energy that went into that has been lost.
We make quilts at our church out of them and send them over across to people who don't have them.
Okay. Had Trinity in Tacoma, too.
Yeah, one day a week we cut and sew and make quilts.
Good.
That's true, yeah, that's more in America than it is anywhere else in the world.
Good. We've got more of the extras to do some of those things,
I think. Some countries don't throw anything away.
It's one thing, too, that I think we're getting used to is a very convenient lifestyle, which also is equated with a throwaway society. When you go into any quick food place, that's probably the perfect example of your sandwich in the box, in a paper sack, in another box if you have several drinks. And you can't not have your sandwich put, like even if you're going to put it right in your mouth, they have to put it in the plastic, the wrapper, or that's how they count. So then they end up, if you insist on taking the sandwich before, you know, right out of the hands before they put it in the plastic, they still take the piece of plastic and at least throw it away because that's their count. But also, I guess, the shoe and the piece of paper in a box in a sack. Now, do we really need, I mean, it's just a pair of tennis shoes. I mean, can't we leave out some of that? But one of the things I always wanted to do with my students was to give them each a sack or a bag and let them go a day or a week and collect their own trash. And I think it would be pretty amazing if I was responsible for everything I threw away within my house, within the yard, for whatever I threw away, I had to take care of it.
You're going to have to soon because the garbage places, they're not going to be there.
Mm-hmm. I've always been amazed with garbage disposals. I mean, where do things, you put those things in the garbage disposal, where does it go?
Sure.
But, I mean, I worked in a big place and like sometimes spoons would get caught down there. And all of a sudden the spoon sliding and you go to catch it and the spoon, what happened to the spoon? You know, it's gone. And it becomes out of sight, out of mind. But, or we throw things in a sink or a garbage disposal and it's gone. And we throw things in a trash can and someone picks it up and it's gone. It's out of sight. Well, somewhere all that garbage is. And that's maybe part of us being disconnected. Up here at Holden, we are more connected because garbage goes somewhere.
Interesting. That's right.
Yeah, the compost. Or we have to, it just doesn't disappear. The plastics that we use or the paper, someone has to do something with it or it's really going to pile up there.
We had some batteries after we got up here, and I told my son, I said, we just can't throw those in with the paper. I know they burn that stuff in the incinerator. You can't throw batteries in there. They blow up. And so they sat around for a few days, and I said, I want you to take care of those batteries. Now go find some place to put those batteries. So he started hunting around, and he came back about 5 minutes later. He said, yeah, I said, there's a box on the loading dock marked batteries, and there's batteries in it. So he found a place.
Yeah. And yet...
But I don't know where they go after that. But I know they don't go on the incinerator.
Like this storm up at the some of the buildings up there.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, people have cameras, and cameras have batteries.
Yeah, that's one of the worst things is batteries, because they're very, they're really bad for the environment. There's a place in Seattle they recycle car batteries, and they've been in trouble off and on for the things that they leak out, and so on. It's dangerous stuff.
Yeah, yeah, accidentally.
So we've kind of got two questions. Where does something come from, the resources, and then when I'm done with it, where does it go? And I don't ask myself that many times, but I'll catch myself getting ready to throw, or when I move, I guess, that's when you keep putting boxes out, it's like someone else's problem, you know, and it's no longer in my house. But I don't really ask myself, well, where did it go, or why did I end up with all that stuff anyway?
What bothers me is not where that's going to go, but where are we going to go when those resources are gone?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I'm already coming to that point when I wonder, well, this isn't going to last forever. What's going to happen when we don't have, well, even the government is worrying about
I think we'll mine the dumps. I really do. I think we'll go back in with our big, heavy equipment and start mining in the dumps, especially for metal.
The one thing we have to start recognizing our limitations, and that means recognizing the finite resources, and that's nothing new, and that's not new words, but yet part of recognizing the limitations is also to recognize our limited knowledge. We've created many things, and a glass product is a perfect example. Here, a nice glass. It looks nice. But what happens to it when I'm done with it? We don't have some of the knowledge as far as what happens with glass products. We can crush. We can do some things, but then what? Is it going to break down to the back? Can it decompose?
No.
Rarely, I have never seen glass decomposing. I've heard it might take a million years to do that, but that's a guess. I don't know if we've created this, but we're limited in our knowledge as far as what happens to it.
I saw a film, and a follow-up explanation, narration that went along with it, that in Europe and in other countries, 30-40% of waste products are recycled. Here, it's only 3-4%. We are very wasteful in this country.
We can't even get a bottle bill in this state. It's coming up again.
It's recycling is on the uptrend. They're trying to get us educated to recycle our cans.
Unless somebody throws a lot of money against it.
Italy is a good example of what they do with their used, their waste products. They recycle just about everything.
Mm-hmm.
But they stripped their hillsides of forest years and years ago, and now they haven't any forest.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to compose everything.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of our warehouses, they are planting, after they've cut, they are planting new trees.
Sometimes.
Well, over there,
they're
doing it over there.
Unless the land can be used for housing or some other purpose, quote unquote.
Recycling is, it's not a new system. It's become a big word in the last 10 to 20 years. But if we learn from nature, recycling is done all the time. A tree lives, it dies, and the dead log, it breaks back down to the soil, enriches it, so new life. Things are being recycled. It's just not left. And
where's most of the food come from? The tree uses.
What?
Where's most of the food come from? The nutrition that the tree uses.
Where does most of it come from? Well, for the tree, a lot of it is just the sun's light, the photosynthesis, but also with the nutrients. If
the biggest part of it's hydrocarbons out of the air, isn't it?
Carbon dioxide,
mm-hmm.
but it can't grow without nitrogen source and phosphorus source from the soil.
So it's a system that's working together. One thing I used to ask students, if nothing ever decayed, what would happen?
Yeah.
if nothing ever recycled? It's an old system, but it's one that I think we really have to learn from. And it just makes sense. It seems absurd that we have created a lot of things and we have no real plan on what happens when we're done with it. And that's part of the attitude of becoming connected with the earth again. I have made something. I am responsible for what happens to it. Glass is simple. We can, and I think you have gotten into some other discussions about some of the chemicals we've created. The nuclear, there's a whole other line you can get into, let alone a glass.
Therefore, I think the basic principle of what you're getting down to would be that starting at the bottom with individual people, we have to start recycling ourselves. Then as the echelons get a little higher up towards corporations, likewise they have to do it.
We put a lot on them and the industries, but industries and factories are making things that we buy. And so that if my choices of products that I choose to buy changes, and many of us change our choices, then I think that it can affect the industry. What were you going to say?
I can't remember now. I was thinking about women's underwear, if you want to know the truth. We screamed and yelled for years because we couldn't get cotton underwear, and now they do line most of the women's underwear with cotton because of the great demand. And it's, you know, it's okay.
Aren't they recycling glass now? Don't they take it and melt it down and reuse it?
That's the problem.
So you're just wondering, I was just thinking about that glass, so what do we do to it?
They do to a large degree. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Recycled glass at Northwestern Glass Company in Seattle, they do. The thing they can't handle is colored glass.
Yeah.
The day before I came up here, I had to get the garage cleaned out because we were renting out the house. And so all the beer bottles other people had been throwing on my lawn, I put together. I'd already called the recycling center, biggest one in Tacoma, and they wouldn't even accept scrap glass, even clear glass.
Right.
They would not take it.
No.
So I went there with my sack full of miscellaneous beer bottles, and that to them was junk glass because they didn't have them all sorted into a case of each kind. Well, the slobs that threw it on my lawn weren't that considerate. You give me them to me in cases.
And the model litter that we have thrown on our lawn certainly doesn't get picked up by the Model Litter Control Act.
I had to bring it back home and throw it in the garbage after a 10-mile round trip. The only thing that made the trip worthwhile was that they would accept for nothing all the oil I drained out of my car, and that would get recycled. But I had a few aluminum cans and a sack or two of newspapers since I turned them into somebody else's paper drive. So I came back with 22 cents and half the stuff I went with.
Yeah, and 10
so
miles.
They do not. You cannot recycle glass.
That's
in Tacoma, right. Unless you have cases full of local beer bottles. That's
but they spent a lot of money fighting the bottle bill 2 years ago.
We have the technology. We know how to do
that's
it.
Right.
Now, whether it's economically a good deal to do it, it's a different issue.
Right.
But it can be done, and if it's yes and no, I guess is we can do it, but financially it might not be.
But glass is not a critical item. There's an unlimited amount of ingredients to make glass.
But there's not an unlimited amount of energy to melt all that stuff down to make it. That's
the problem.
I think for me though, it's there's glass and there's plastics and I think we can go on that we have created many items and products and just. what's going to happen to them? You know, what's, and I mean, that's more of the question than just the glass. There's just a lot of things. Now, I believe that this world, it was not created for us just to consume. That just doesn't make any sense. I think we're all enough artists to realize that when we make something, when I draw something, I didn't do it just to crinkle it up. That there's a lot of me within that painting and that drawing. There's a lot of God within all that has been created. And for us just to be consuming it at such a rapid pace, again, that just doesn't make sense. And I don't know whether we view us as consuming it. We're just living our lives. But again, the attitude that when I turn on the lights, something happens. When I bought this watch, it was connected with something. When I choose to buy a waste paper basket, pretty simple choice, okay? Plastic or wood, what do I want to buy? Or paper, you have all these choices. Well, if I buy plastic, it's a lot cheaper, and it maybe didn't take that many resources, but what's going to eventually happen to it? Do I want wood? Well, what's a forest? You know, you have all these questions you can ask, and then I also have to ask, do I really need that waste paper basket? I mean, do I really need a waste paper basket? That's even an initial question. And those questions I ask might be different than other people's questions. But what we have to do is start asking the questions. We're part of this whole system. It's that web of life that we continually hear about. That when you walk by the stream outside, that creek, the stream, somehow is connected to the pair of shoes that you have on, especially if you're in Washington. It no doubt flows into the Columbia River and the hydroelectric plants and that power the factories. That nice little creek that you've maybe meditated by is connected to you. Those plants that you just look and say, oh, what a beautiful tree. That tree that's part of a system that's giving you air to breathe. It's all together. And my life is not away from the system. I'm part of the web. And part one of the more depressing questions that the responses that I ask children, can we live without plants? Oh no. Can animals live without people? Are you kidding? No way. Wait, listen to this again. Can animals live without us? No, they can't. Animals need people. Well, that's usually my response. Where do you go from there? And now let's, an isolated area, and animals are there. No, people, we take care of them. We feed them. And I thought that was just one time. And so I've asked that many times since that initial time. Continually I get the same response. And sadly, I think that's the way a lot of us think, that the world exists. So just for me and Eastern, we're part of that ecological system. We're part of that web of life. And as much as we hate to admit it, you know, the earth could go on without people. You know, you hate to say that, you know, but it really could, ecologically.
It's such a quiet system when it's running itself. Unless it's blowing its volcanoes or something. Or storming.
So probably what we have to do is somehow work on an attitude of progress. And not the progress for the Homo sapiens. Not that species. It's progress for the planet. And that planet is a community of the plants, of animals, and of people. And other than ecologically, I think we've been talking about just the system we're part of, we also as Christians need to get into the theological discussion as far as the covenant of the earth, and that we have been called to take care of it, to live within the system. and the system has some basic concepts and change and adaptation and interdependence. And when overpopulation happens with any species, you have the same consequences. And it doesn't matter whether it's the deer population in these woods or if it's a people population, you're not going to have enough food. And how are we, and if one part of the species is eating too much, then some of the other animals or people won't have food to live. And it's part of the whole gamut. As I need to be responsible in my life because I'm called to be a caretaker in Genesis, because I'm called by Christ to live a caring life, a loving life, and that includes the people, it includes the plants, it includes everything. And that caring lifestyle for me is more than staying on trails when I hike. My caring lifestyle is more than picking up litter. Those are the easy things. A caring lifestyle means asking questions when I go to buy something in a store. When I go to buy apples. Here I'm living in Ohio and I'm buying apples. Do I buy Ohio's apples or do I buy Washington's apples? Washington apples look really pretty, but I also know the energy that it took to get them to Ohio. And there's questions all the time with what we buy. And it's not easy. It's really challenging. And we have to accept some of the trade-offs. That whatever choice I make, that there are some trade-offs. And I can't be so caught up in the trade-offs. Do I use a plastic waste paper basket or cardboard or wood? What should I do? That I become stagnated and I can't even make a choice with buying a waste paper basket. But I need to be at least asking some questions and then moving on. And to ask questions, you also need people around you to support you in the questions. You can't do it alone. People think you're pretty strange when you're trying to decide on a waste paper basket and they ask you what the decision is and you're talking about the ecological consequences of buying, which, you know, clerks are used to what color do you like, not plastic over wood. You know, and so to ask questions, you need people around who can help you with those questions. Reactions at this point or thoughts? I've been talking for a while.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned you could get a little weird doing this because for quite a while, we stacked stuff up in our house. You know, you can feel responsible for every piece of paper that comes in, and if you have to sort it according to, and there again, you have to have 300 pounds of one kind to recycle it in Tacoma. And Pierce County is a big place, and if you drive down to the Tide Flats, it's going to be about a 16-mile round trip, and at least from our house, and how many cars will carry, you know, 600-700 pounds of paper or whatever to take down. And you weigh your car and you try to turn it in and you can't turn in the sacks don't go with the newspapers, they go in a different place and have to be weighed at a different time, the cardboard the same, and it gets to be to the point where you're crazy. You think separating our garbage up here, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 kinds of things being separated, if you think about your household that way, you can go bonkers. And you begin to pile it up in rooms. And we have had that experience. Because they won't take Xerox sheets. They don't recycle. It contaminates the paper. And it's...
Yeah.
I think what you're saying amounts to the fact that, one, you need to know a very great amount in order to live responsibly and effectively, and two, no matter how hard you try and how much you know, that the system may not allow it unless there are some structural changes.
That's when you go crazy.
I may not need 23 kinds of paper, each of which would have to be separated in order to be possible to recycle it, but it's there.
Mm-hmm. It's like all the different sizes of jars. When I go into this store, I always debate, can I reuse that jar? Until I've got reams of jars in the basement, shelves and shelves of jars, till you're crazy.
So where do we go from here?
food cooperatives are really helpful in Minneapolis, where we live. We buy all of our large things in bulk at the food cooperative, and we volunteer clerking so that we can help support it. But we buy flour and fill great big jars, and we buy sugar and fill great big jars.
And then when you're done with the jars, you can take them back?
And right, again and again and again. And fruit and vegetables are right there, not already packed in plastic and things. And the cooperatives are really nifty in the sense that you have to pay extra an extra price for packaging. If you don't come with your paper bags and your glass jars, you have to buy a paper bag from them that costs 2 cents, which then, of course, 2 cents isn't very much. And still, when you realize that it makes people be aware that that's a resource that should be used. We first got introduced to the whole question of packaging when we were students in Germany. We went to the store, and Kathleen said she wanted to buy a dozen eggs, and so the clerk handed her the dozen eggs. And we weren't aware of the fact that you bring your packages along at that point in Germany, which I think is a marvelous thing. So we have tried to do our little bit by buying all of our big things at the co-op, where there isn't the packaging. At least that's something.
How do you find out about co-ops in an area? Or how do you get introduced to a specific one?
I must say that we didn't come in on the ground level as far as the cooperatives are concerned. But we're so glad they're there. We buy all of it, as much as we can there for those reasons.
I think sometimes the co-op, the image is a bunch of young people gathering together to share some food and all that. And I think the trend is much more broader than that. It's a lot of people who are seeing that.
It's a store.
Yeah.
It's a regular store.
Yeah.
I've been thinking about how wasteful people are. Now, you take animals, eat just what they need, but we get a lot of stuff that we don't use and don't need or throw away. I guess people are the only things to do, only ones to do that.
Yeah, and that's a good point.
Mm-hmm.
For a long time, we've been learning from the mammals, the different animals, and then all of a sudden, we've kind of gone away and have such excess.
I guess we're just too fun, I don't know. I try not to use all my leftovers and everything else, but I still can't do it.
Yeah.
Well, I think the stores or the people that make the things lead to excess. So you can't go in and buy, you want to buy one of an item.
Yeah,
you can't buy, there's 12 in a package, or there's 6 in a package, or you got to buy 32 ounces instead of a small amount, and you're penalized for buying a small amount.
Yeah, except for the cooperatives.
Right.
And so you have, there are places, but it's like a secret. I was reading in the Everett paper, and they have a natural grains and the bulk teas and you can, all these things are available, but it was like, this is a special item in the paper mentioning it, instead of saying, they should come out with a sheet mention all the places and each community should have one. If they don't, they should start one. Farming communities are
co-ops.
Right, a prime example. They could, they could bring things to the central area.
You're coming more and more to that now.
Right.
And you join the farming co-op, and you get a return from them every year. How much you spend, you get so much back.
Well, they have gas.
They have everything.
They have co-ops of other varieties too. And I was just thinking, we're getting away from the idea of a neighborhood. I was thinking about. I was talking to a friend a few months back, and we were saying, why do we need 12 lawnmowers on this block? Why do we need 12 lawnmowers? Why, when we're all out there at the same time mowing our lawns?
Sunday afternoon,
whatever. We could have a community lawnmower, and that's, we're buying one of an item instead of 12 an item.
And it, you know, it just made common sense. And there's other things, there's common things that you use very infrequently that you could have in a common shed, and tools, you know, some tools you don't use all the time, but those are things that everybody goes out and buys those items and use twice a year and then put them away, and you're wasting.
You're almost impossible to do that though, because you're going to take maybe four. We'll take very good care of all.
There you go. That's the very reason why
there's two over here that is using the same products. They're going to abuse them.
Yep, they're going to leave it out of your ass.
And there you are.
That's right. They're going to leave it all screwed up for you. And there will be two people that are very resentful.
It's almost impossible.
Yeah.
I disagree. I think it is possible. Our church has done it, and it works out beautifully. We're in a large church in Minneapolis. Big inner city church, but we have done some of that cooperative thing that works beautifully. We have a once a week produce thing where people bring their fresh fruits and vegetables from their garden, and truck farmers bring it, and what it amounts to is a big sharing of, we kind of exchange what we have for what somebody else has.
But your tools too?
Yes, and we do it with some tools, not with all the tools, but with some tools. We have them in our congregation, and people borrow them.
Hand tools, I would think that, Mark hand tools would work, but lawnmowers, any of the motor things that have to be repaired or use gasoline, I would think you'd be in trouble.
I think the part of that is when it wasn't the option, and when the farms especially had to loan out equipment, not everyone could afford some of the equipment that was necessary to farm, and there was that real sharing. And then when trouble came, that you had your core friends, and we've gone to the trend that I want to be able to exist totally by myself without need of anybody, and isolated. And I personally enjoy having a car and going when I want to leave and when I want to come. And it's an inconvenience to have to wait around for people when you carpool. But are we to the point that maybe I have to really maybe I have to be inconvenient. We're getting to that point that maybe when I loan out something that's part of the way we have to go to, and that if sometimes the tools aren't as sharp, that we need to be open and honest with people and figure out how can we work it out, because we really, this is more important. Now let's sit down and how can the system work? Here at Holden, it's a good example. Not everybody has the camping equipment. And so you have a few people with backpacks. Well, here. Now, does everybody need a backpack? How often can we go out backpacking? I mean, once a week, maybe? 6 nights, my backpack is in my closet. Well, certainly those other nights, other people can be using it.
I'd like to pursue just a little bit more what she was saying about the guy who leaves the thing in a mess. I am unable, if I were to get back my backpack and it had a hole in it from somebody or got mauled by a bear or whatever, and I would get it back in that condition, they just give it back to me dirty, ripped, torn, no explanation whatsoever, I would be unable to go to them and say, hey look, I think you ought to buy me a new backpack, you really messed this one up. I would be unable to do that. I can't even hardly return something to the store that's really, truly defective. It'll sit in my house for 20 years, and I'll look at it and I'll say, boy, you know, I really ought to take that back, but I don't know where the sales slip is. And, you know, it goes on and on like that, and there's something about the way we are, the communication that we have or something. And up here at Holden, it's a lot better. Because we do try to approach each other when we see a problem, mm-hmm. in a way that's not not saying, you did this thing to me, you fix it. But I feel hurt because of this problem, you know. Can you help my hurt or whatever?
Respond to that?
You realize what would happen if we would resort to this type of living?
What?
Where we would reduce all the consumption to...
What?
To maybe a third of what we're consuming today?
What?
Our economy would fall apart.
It already is.
It would. You see, our economy is based on producing more and more and consuming more and more, and that's what makes prosperity.
Ah, that's
now think about that.
Okay.
That's as far as our environment here in the United States is concerned.
Yes.
We have built a platform where we are today that if we did what is suggested, reduced by down to one third of what we have, we would have chaos.
It'd be a revolution.
The economic situation would be untenable by everybody. We would fall back into the dark ages.
That two thirds of the factories would go out of business, and two thirds of
people
everything would go out. See, so we'd have to resort to a very simple life, like the Indians used to live.
Well, what's wrong with that?
Yeah.
What's wrong with that? I'd like it.
Huh?
I'd like it.
I would too.
I have some of that.
I bet that generation would like it, though.
No.
You know.
I've been thinking a lot about that because 2 years ago, when we tried to get the bottle bill passed, it struck me that everywhere in our life, we deliberately manufacture garbage to be purchased, used once, and thrown in the garbage. And that's what the system's based on, not necessities, but on garbage, like aluminum cans full of crap to drink. And it just goes on. You can go bonkers doing this. I know, because that's one reason I'm up here. I'm a little bit bonkers on this subject, because I am tired of seeing stuff. And you said something about we buy what is manufactured that they say we want. And I don't believe it. I don't think we really want it. I think we buy stuff we don't want.
There's where advertising comes in.
That's
they
right.
They make it so glamorous.
Yes, but they say that we only buy what we want to buy, that we put the demand on the manufacturer. And I think it used to be that way, but I don't anymore.
You just said something that was very interesting.
Good.
You were sensitive to the fact that you were going to make a choice between Ohio apples and Washington apples because it took energy to transport them from here to there. Okay, how about all the coffee that people drink? There's no nutrition in coffee whatsoever. And it takes a lot of energy to bring that coffee from South America and Africa and all these places. There are a lot of things just like that.
It's a good thing. I'm glad you brought that up, because I'll talk about some of the tea.
Carry this so far that, boy, there's no end to it.
But one thing with a lot of the coffee and tea products, that they are being grown on land in starving countries, and the people who should be growing food to put in their own belly are growing the plants for us.
And the economic gain for it is not going to the people who are doing the work.
No, that's right. Some of these.
It doesn't help them that the money comes into the country. It goes to the rich landowners.
That's true with California lettuce, though.
Well, that's true of tea and coffee, too. A lot of the
bananas.
The harmful things that are in those products go into Coke and the things we don't need, too. You carry this so far.
And now it's now they're removing caffeine from pop, and it's a big thing. You know, it's an advertising gimmick. Let's buy this because for years we've been putting this into your system. Now we're going to take it out of your system. Now let's praise the companies for doing it. You know
why they're doing it? Because Consumer Reports tested it and came out with their little articles in their magazine and blew them away.
You know, we're having light everything. We have light wine, we have light beer, we have light cigarettes, we have light cheese. You know, now that, you know, they're removing all these things.
There's light and moving.
Yeah, they're just taking, you know, things out of it, and it doesn't make it any better. It just makes people want to feel that they're getting something more value out of it.
Yeah, and then they charge you more for taking it.
Right?
Yeah, that's right.
A lot of things to laugh about.
And a part of that, I think we need to keep a sense of humor with it, or you could be so intense. But the thing you're asking, we're saying, well, this, you know, if we really reduce our consumption, this could really change things. Yeah, it really could. And there might be some more resources and food for some starving people. I've been talking a lot about the impact on the land, Mm-hmm. But part of creation are people, and globally, and our lifestyle dictating some very sad things as far as to other people.
The thing is, you grow stuff and you think, well, this will help the starving countries. Well, it gets over there and it sits on the docks a lot of the time, and it never gets to where it's going. Mm-hmm. And the rats and vermin eat it up, mm-hmm. not the people.
Mm-hmm.
And it never gets to the people.
Mm-hmm. So
there's your question.
That's where we're in a political situation.
Yeah. Right. Well, that's what I say. What can you do about that?
Well, what you can do is really important, and that's what we are responsible to do, to see that the money that we give, the benevolence that we give as Christians, goes to places where it's going to be used well. And that can be read about, that can be studied about, and learned that the money that you give is reaching the destination.
We know the Lutheran Relief gets there.
That's right. Lutheran World Relief is good, and World Hunger is marvelous, and some of those programs do what we hope that's being done with our money and our gifts.
Okay. Before we end, I'd like to end on some very practical things that I can do, that we can do. So you can get in these discussions and you analyze the problems, and then we leave. And then I go home, and what do I do on Monday morning? What are some things either that you have done or that you sense might help? We're talking just starting from the basics.
Call up the light company with pencil and paper in hand and ask them when the peak power periods are, and do everything you can to not do any electrical uses during peak power times. That's a big help. If lots of people would do that, we would not need so many plants, because they build those plants so that the peak power times can have the power.
Does that make sense to people, what peak hour does that?
Yeah.
That's
mm-hmm.
a
very good
one. Okay.
That should really be brought home to us who have been in the village the last two or three days.
Yeah.
I wish they'd tell me when the peak power times are.
Yeah.
At
right
home
there.
The village.
Yeah.
Every time they do the dishes.
Yeah.
You should run home and turn off the porch lights when you come out early in the morning, and turn everything mm-hmm. off that you can all over the village.
But also,
I know, but they have to have lights on here during the daytime too.
Oh yeah.
Well, yeah. I'm just saying that.
But
if people wouldn't blow their hair dry after their shower during the time when they needed it up here, you see, that's the kind of thing they could do.
Take showers.
They take, yeah, you'd be taking showers during that time.
We don't need them, but they have to be on. Because the generators wouldn't work if you didn't consume some of the power that's.
Yeah, but I'm just talking about the peak times.
Okay.
Just when they need it the most.
Okay. Something else.
You need to make your actions and your wishes known to the manufacturers.
Mm-hmm.
It's not nearly so effective, I don't think, even if a million people quit buying something for the reasons we've talked about, if the manufacturers don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't take a million letters, I don't think, before they'll begin to respond in some way.
But they do count them.
I'm choosing not to use your product because of this and this. Mm-hmm. Good point. What's another one?
I think we have to identify the things that are non-renewable and be careful in their use. But some of the other things that are renewable, I don't know why we should hesitate to use them.
Okay. I think that a tendency when we get in these discussions is, oh, we have to go way back to the pioneer days. And as an environmentalist, I guess I get accused of that fairly often. There's a lot we can do and still have a lifestyle. We're not going way back, but we sure have a lot we can do to get to a point that's a fair lifestyle. What were you going to say?
Well, I was raised on a farm, and of course we had to learn to economize, and it was during the rough times back in the 30s, so we didn't know about that. But we do not put our food into disposal. I put it all back in the compost, and
right.
all goes out in the garden.
Right.
I raise a good garden. Now everybody can't have a garden. I appreciate that. But wherever you can, use it. Anything that will vegetate and bacteria will take care of, put it back in the garden. So I have a good garden, and I have food to give away. I don't have to go to the store and buy it. I've got a bushel of potatoes at home. I raise myself. They're good potatoes. That's because I use my garden. It's a year-round process.
If you live in too small, if you live in too small of an area to have your own garden, perhaps your church can get some land and have some gardens, and then your food could be used as compost for those. I know some areas that does that.
Even if you have land and you yourself are don't want to use that land for a garden, advertise, say, I have land available that if someone wants to have a garden, you can have it here. They have
a vacant lot.
We're not using the land that's available in the right way, and I think the more land that we can use in that way, there'll be less, you know, and if we use what you can use, give 10% or whatever to a food bank, you know, there that we could reduce the number of people.
Now, there are some cities or communities that advertise, let's say the city owned property, and they do. Okay. They'll advertise, we'll dig up and prepare the garden plot for you in this certain area. Anybody interested, contact us, but very few do.
A real interesting situation, and I think some of these other men here can relate back to it. I think in my dad's time, we can see where it's a wonder we're not in complete chaos. And during his lifetime, when it took 95% of the people working long hours, the fact that they shortened their lifespan, a lot of them, to 30 or 40 years in order to feed the other 5% of the people. And now we've gotten up to where 5% are feeding the 95%.
Yeah, right.
And producing most of the export food in the world.
That's right.
That's because they have.
And it's a wonder we're not in complete chaos.
Because we're using energy, that's why
we're increasing.
But
we're using energy more economically.
That's right. I don't see any small farms like you used to years ago for each individual.
But it's something big to look at when you think of how much of the potential that we are doing now, and the cost in human energy. At the time my dad was born, and in the years of life that it cost those people at that time, and they didn't waste or throw anything away, because they didn't have it to throw away. It looks like sometimes we're wanting to regress back to closer to this. I personally have a little trouble with it.
Two good books about, two very practical books as to what I can do. It's very overwhelming. Where does something come from? A lot of times I don't know what all went into this product that I'm getting ready to buy. One is How to Live Better on Less and Living More with Less, which is saying, both of them are saying, when we're talking about living with less, we're not talking about less of a life of joy and hope and love. We're just talking about
material.
Right. And I think we have to ask the question, have we really become possessed by our possessions? Every time I get ready to move, I keep asking myself that, because I have to ask, do I want to move? Look at all my things. And I'm not doing perhaps what God is calling me to do, because it's such a pain to have to pack and move. And all the possessions, and I'm caught up in what. And maybe our possessions are really blocking us from what God is really calling us to do. So I hope in this hour that you will start, or maybe just it reinforces some questions that we need to ask. Where is this coming from? Where is it going to go when I'm done with it? And also, do I really need this? Mm-hmm. Do I really need this? One of my favorite stories is by Dr. Seuss. It's called The Lorax. And one of the things in it, they talk about needs. And needs are find something that everyone needs. That's what our advertisement always tells us. And those of us who tell that story a lot get caught into the needs. is this something I need or is this a need? And I look in my room, I look in my car, and I see all these needs, things that I think I need, but I probably don't. And maybe all of us need to look around at the needs and to just ask some questions and to ask them in light of the gospel. Go be caretakers of the earth.